The headlines: Iran's leader says the Hajj pilgrimage is a global issue that aims to enhance Muslims' unity in the face of arrogant powers. Iran and Russia sign an agreement that will speed up the construction of a transit railway connecting southern Asia to northern Europe. Several Palestinians are injured in yet another Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the goal of Hajj is to promote Islamic unity against oppression and arrogance. Addressing officials and a group of pilgrims, Ayatollah Khamenei described Hajj as the most important ritual. He said the occasion is a practical manifestation of Islam's opposition to geographical, racial, class, and other distinctions. This at the time, the leader added, when the self-proclaimed civilized countries are still struggling with black and white as well as European and non-European racial bias. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Muslims perform their Hajj rituals like they are from one race and nationality. Some 89,000 Iranians are set to travel to Saudi Arabia this year to perform the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Iran and Russia finalized an agreement for the construction of a mega railway project that connects the two countries via Azerbaijan. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi was present at the deal's signing ceremony held in the capital, Tehran. Raisi hailed the construction of the Rasht-Astara railway, calling it an important project which will benefit both countries. Russian President Vladimir Putin joined the ceremony virtually. He also emphasized the significance of the project and promised that Moscow would put all efforts to complete it. The Rasht-Astara railway will complete a south-north corridor that connects southern Asia to northern Europe. It will have a leading role in facilitating transportation and transit. Journalist and political commentator Fred Weir joins us now from Moscow. Mr. Weir, give us your thoughts on this recent deal signed between Iran and Russia.
This north-south transport corridor is potentially a really big deal. It would enable ships, in fact, if it's completed, to get all the way from India, it would enable a rail link up into Russia, and from there along Russian railways east and west to China, to Europe. It's a huge project, and it's it would be like a major competitor to the Suez Canal. It's been on the books, sort of in partial construction, for about 20 years. But this is the last leg, this railway. I think it's 150 kilometers or so. And it's been stalled for some time. It's difficult terrain there in northern Iran along the Caspian coast, but also it needs financing. And it's suddenly become very important to Russia because of the Ukraine war and factors like that. It's Russia's isolation. Russia wants to develop alternatives for Russia's economy and its future. And therefore, I think Putin has weighed in. I think Russia will provide the necessary financing. So in 2 or 3 years, we may actually see this project come to fruition.
And also, you mentioned, Mr. Weir, about the importance to Russia. There's also the issue of bringing closer Eurasian ties and issue of de-dollarization, which this could help in that regard. Tell us more about that.
Well, of course, it has huge implications for political unity down there. Well, you're down there. So in Eurasia, it's certainly there are obstacles. Armenia, Azerbaijan is one obstacle to completing this project, the geopolitical situation. But in general, the trend in Eurasia is toward more unity, more economic integration. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is growing very fast. And so these links that sort of avoid the West, avoid the Suez Canal, avoid all that, but become internal links for Eurasia, will have great implications for not only political unity, but economic integration. It's really, on principle, a huge deal. But we're not, let's be clear, we're not celebrating its completion at this point. It's still a work in progress. But one major hurdle seems to be overcome today.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Weir. Fred Weir, journalist and political commentator, joining us from the Russian capital, Moscow. Elsewhere, Israeli forces and settlers are raided an area near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, injuring several Palestinians. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with the details.
This morning, dozens of Israeli settlers raided Nablus, raided the eastern part of the city, to storm Joseph's tomb, Qabr Yusuf, this site that is considered very sacred by the Israelis, and that they are not allowed to enter it because it's inside the city of Nablus. It's surrounded by Palestinian neighborhoods. However, they raided this site, of course, under protection from the Israeli military, who also were there with their guns and raided the site as well to make sure that the settlers are protected and safe. Clashes erupted between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces during the raid. At least six Palestinians were wounded by the fire of Israeli forces. Five others sustained injuries as they fell down while they were, attacked by the Israeli forces. The Palestinians say that they will do their utmost in order to make sure that the settlers will not again enter the Joseph's tomb that is sacred by the Palestinians and Muslims as well. The Israeli forces had also set, a number of checkpoints around the city of Nablus.
Israelis are racing to obtain passports as the regime's recent bloodshed in the Gaza Strip and Palestinians' retaliatory strikes has caused havoc among them. Israel's interior minister has called the situation a passport crisis, with reports suggesting a major logjam of people applying for or renewing passports. It has prompted the regime to launch Operation Passport Marathon and create appointment-free passport counters, which will be operating for a month. On the first day of the operation alone, over 6,000 passports were issued. That's according to official figures. Israeli media claim the surge in passport demands is due to the backlog caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. But a survey conducted last year showed Israelis are becoming more and more worried about their future. That's due to the growing might of Palestinian resistance forces, a cost-of-living crisis, and the power struggle inside Israel. The North Korean leader has accused the United States and South Korea of escalating confrontational moves, saying Pyongyang reserves a right to self-defense. Kim Jong-un made the remarks while inspecting the country's first military reconnaissance satellite. North Korea says it has built the satellite but is yet to launch it. During the inspection, Kim urged officials to speed up preparations for the launch. North Korea has unveiled a number of military capabilities in recent months. Those include new, smaller nuclear warheads, a nuclear-capable underwater attack drone, and an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of striking anywhere in the U.S. The hyped-up military activities come amid U.S. and South Korean military exercises, which the North says are rehearsals for a, quote, all-out war. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his country is ready to partner with South Korea to defend it against North Korea's nuclear and missile threats.
Canada is committed to supporting the Republic of Korea's efforts towards a denuclearized, peaceful, and prosperous Korean peninsula. We will continue to call on North Korea to return to dialogue and diplomacy.
Addressing South Korea's parliament, Trudeau also urged North Korea to abandon its weapons programs and resume denuclearization talks. He said Canada is committed to increase military engagement to fend off threats to regional security. He said Ottawa is ready to boost partnership with Seoul on critical minerals and clean energy projects as well. Trudeau arrived in Seoul on Tuesday. This is the first visit by a Canadian leader in 9 years. Trudeau has just held talks with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. Independent political analyst Andrew Loing joined us from Hong Kong with his take on Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's visit to South Korea.
The Canadian dimension is very, very new. because Canada is not always playing a key part in this confrontation with North Korea. So this sudden activism on the part of the Canadian Prime Minister hides something much more important. And the greater importance resonates with the historic kind of friendship between South Korea and Japan. The two countries, again, never saw eye to eye for a long, long time. And now, with the emergence of a Western-friendly prime minister in South Korea, the two countries, both Japan and South Korea, seem to be seeing things on all fours. And then what cements all this together is China. So you can see that the China is now the hidden agenda, and what the United States wants the South Korea to form closer ties with Japan, Canada playing an important role to be on good terms with South Korea, and also on developing military kind of associations, is a plot to bring NATO, a kind of Asian version of NATO, to the Pacific to contain and confront China. Of course, the North Korea is still the problem, but it's not the biggest problem. Because, as I said, North Korea has been with us for a long, long time.
Former British Prime Minister Liz Truss has urged the UK government to get tough with China over some issues, including Taiwan.
Recently, there have been too many mixed messages from the free world. We need to end that ambiguity. This is because there are still too many in the West who are trying to cling on to the idea that we can somehow cooperate with China on issues like climate change as if there's nothing wrong.
Truss, who was on a five-day visit to Taiwan, called the self-ruled island the world's most consequential place. She also criticized her successor, Rishi Sunak, and other Western governments for their idea of cooperating with China in different fields. China has decried Truss's Taiwan trip, calling it a dangerous political show which will harm Britain's interests. Tensions between China and the West, the U.S. in particular, has risen over their growing military and political support for Taiwan. Beijing regards the island as its own territory under the One China policy. China often conducts military drills around the island as a warning to Taiwan's separatist forces and their collusion with external powers. Well, the future of grain supply from Ukraine remains ambiguous as a pact between Moscow and Kiev on exports is coming to an end. The UN says the last ship is due to leave a Ukrainian port before the deal expires on Thursday. Officials from Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN met in Istanbul last week to discuss the deal, which allowed Kiev to export its agricultural products through the Black Sea amid the war. The two warring sides signed the deal brokered by the UN and Turkey in last July to help tackle a global food crisis. It has been extended twice, but Russia says it will not accept another extension unless Western sanctions against it are removed. Moscow argues that the restrictions on payments, logistics, and insurance have hindered its exports of food and fertilizer. The grain export through Black Sea has faced many challenges since the Russian military offensive against Ukraine. The EU's spring 2023 economic forecast predicts subdued growth across the 27-country bloc, but suggests there are mounting risks to financial well-being. The ongoing conflict in Ukraine has again been singled out as a particular concern. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Industrial production in the EU's top economy, Germany, has suffered an unexpected decline. It's bad news for the entire bloc. However, a forecast published on Monday suggests the EU's economy is set to grow modestly. But downside risks are also growing.
Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine continues to cast a long shadow of uncertainty over the economy.
Grants to help struggling EU firms will soon be withdrawn, Eurozone finance ministers announced on Monday.
Companies that are receiving support will have to look at how they can support their own long-term viability.
A growing number of people are reaching the conclusion that the West could have prevented the war in Ukraine through constructive dialogue with Russia. The cost of living crisis resulting from the conflict is taking its toll.
It's time to be talking about peace, not about weapons or providing more financial aid to the war.
If the parties could come together and agree a peace, that would be wonderful, but you know, I'm not sure that's happening, right?
Apparently, financial markets are looking on nervously because so many things have been impacted by the war.
Due to the fact also of the uncertainties in China and lower exports and imports from China, and also due to the expectations of the economy in the United States.
A conference in Brussels on Monday heard that cracks are showing in the EU with respect to the war in Ukraine.
The Europeans have been united, but they need to be much more united.
Trade union members across the EU point out that wages are not keeping up with inflation as the bloc continues to spend billions of euro on arming Ukraine. Therefore, they suggest the onus is now on Western leaders to bring about de-escalation as a matter of urgency. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Ecuador's President Guillermo Lasso has asserted his innocence over corruption charges at an impeachment trial being held in the country's parliament. Lasso, accused of being aware of an embezzlement scheme and contracts of the state-owned oil transportation company, but he did nothing to stop it. His opponents say the scheme cost the country millions of dollars in losses. The president has, however, denied any wrongdoing, arguing that the alleged embezzlement occurred before he took office. While making his defense, Lasso referred to the charges as unfounded and accused his opponents of creating a fictitious situation. He also called on them to jointly work toward maintaining the country's security. Lawmakers are expected to vote on Lasso's impeachment over the weekend. 92 votes in the 137-member assembly are needed to remove him, but the president could preempt the vote if he decides to invoke a constitutional clause referred to as two-way death. This would see Lasso resign, triggering snap elections for both the presidency and the National Assembly. This is the second impeachment proceeding against the president since he was sworn in May 2021. Last year, Parliament failed to garner enough votes to make it to the trial stage. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iwan's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show.
This time, our journey took us to the city of Apar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications.
Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages.
In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least 5 mines in Fars province. Esterlal Abade Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has 3 factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal-Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramicware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries.
The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials such as fire clay meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market.
Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports composed some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market, it is eyeing higher horizons. Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. Offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops, tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country.
The platform is called Beta. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Beta digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFTs that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you right here next time for another edition of Bazaar.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن است. دوری از قرآن است. قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the keys of life we were talking about previously was clothes and things that we wear. Now, obviously, to the things that we wear, there are etiquettes and there are moral values that we need to adhere to. So nothing is out of chance or just merely nothing. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in every action, He has a say, and He wants us to adhere to some of the rules. Now, when it comes to things that we wear, amongst the things that we wear, besides clothes and jewelry and what have you, we wear footwear, right? Whether it's a shoe, a sandal, or, you know, whatever makes you comfortable, right? The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says, wear a sandal or a shoe and be more light. He also said, "Man ittakhadha na'lan falyastajiddaha." If you take a shoe or a sandal or whatever you wear on your foot, he says, make sure it's constantly clean. Keep it cleaned, right? Keep it polished. Keep it looking nice. وَمَن تَخَذَ ثَوْبًا فَلِنَظِّفْ. And whoever puts on a garment or a piece of clothes, let him make sure that it's also always clean. And he also says, إِذَا اشْتَرَيْتَ نَعْلًا فَاسْتَجْدِدْهَا وَإِذَا اشْتَرَيْتَ ثَوْبًا فَاسْتَجْدِدْ. Same thing. If you buy clothes or a shoe, make sure they're constantly new. And he also says, the nation of my ummah, men or women, when they leave at putting on a shoe and making shoes or sandals or whatever they want to wear, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will leave them aside as well. So there's a great emphasis here on a person having to wear a clean shoes or sandals or slippers, whatever that you have to wear, but it has to be new, and making sure you constantly making it clean. Because obviously with shoes and footwear, because we go to different places and we step on different things, so it does get pretty dirty and it does bring a lot of viruses and, I don't know, bacteria, and a lot of things come with it. So he says keeping it clean, it means that you're staying safe and healthy. That's why there's so much emphasis on keeping your clothes clean and also your shoes clean. Not to mention the fact that when people look at us, you know, sometimes we say that the first thing a person looks at is the shoe of another person. So usually people look at us and, you know, they start to say things. So we have to make sure that we don't give them the chance to badmouth us in front of us or even behind our backs. Now, let us take a short break and then we will continue right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و ثواب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره, دعا هم داره, ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دیگه، اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره، همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری میگه ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. When it comes to wearing things, one has to do certain things. First thing, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says, إِذَا خَلَعَ أَحَدَكُمْ ثِيَابَهُ فَلْيُسَلِّمْ وَكَذَلِكَ, and he also said, فَإِذَا نَزَعَ أَحَدَكُمْ ثَوْبَهُ فَلْيَطْوِهِ. Two things you have to do when you want to take off your clothes. First, فَلْيُسَلِّمْ أَسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ, when he takes off his clothes. And he also has to fold his clothes once he takes them off. I mean, to be quite honest, this is sometimes, it is very hard for people to digest, that we've been told to say salam when we go to our houses, even if there's no one there. We've been told to say salam, you know, when we do certain actions, when there's no one there. One might be asking, why? To whom am I saying salam? Now, the reality is, whether we accept it or not, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created other creatures beside me and you. So there are angels, and there are jinns, there are shayateen, and there could be possibly other creatures. Now, when it comes to the malaika, they're very involved in the life of a human being. We have a hadith that says, every human being, he has six angels designated to him to take care of him. And obviously, this is a general hadith, so which means every human being. Mu'mineen especially, they have sometimes extra malaika designated to them. And these malaika, if you don't see them, they see you. At least we have raqibun and atid on our shoulders. One rises the good, one rises the bad. And these guys are with us 24 hours. They don't sleep even when we sleep. So when it comes to saying salam, it's been explained that in a lot of a hadith that you say salam to the malaika. They hear, they reply. So when he says, if you take your clothes, you say salam, well, obviously, it is either for them or it could be for some other reason that we have not been told of. But we have to do what we are told. And the same thing when it comes to taking our clothes off. We see this is a really bad habit, and especially a lot of parents and wives and spouses complain about, is that sometimes when a person comes to the house, and especially when they're tired, they take off their clothes and they just throw it at the couch or at the bed or whatever is close by. And this is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not like, and Ahl Bayt alayhim salam do not like either. Because a mu'min should be organized. A mu'min should be clean. I've seen this times and times over. We see this in our houses with our spouses and partners. Sometimes we see this with our kids. They walk in the house, they throw their socks in one direction, the shoe is another direction, and as they get in the house, they take piece by piece of their clothes and they just keep throwing it until they hit the couch or they hit the bed. Now, this is not the akhlaq or the morals of a Muslim. You come in the house, you take off your shoe, you put it aside, you take your socks and you put them aside, you take your clothes off, either you fold them or at least you hang them. These days we hang our clothes, we don't fold them, unless you want to store them away. So the Ahl Bayt, they say to us, keep clean, stay organized, be mindful that there are other things watching you, malaika watching you, angels watching you, even shaitan himself is watching you. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala ultimately is watching us. So when it comes to the way we conduct ourselves, outside we are one thing, inside we are another. A mu'min, his inside and his outside is always the same. We will leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.